All right. So, what's going on, everybody? We are back with another installment of For My Life, FML, with James Rocco. And we have with us today Scott Giltner, right?
Correct.
All right. So, Scott Giltner, U.S. Army veteran. We're just going to get to know him, his story. We gave him a rundown before we went on here for a couple of minutes. Basically, our goal today is, like every week, we just want to get to the point where he shares with you how he went from transition and where he was struggling with something. He figured something out and figured out how he was for his life. And that's where we're going to go from here. So, Scott, please introduce yourself, brother.
All right. Well, like James is saying, I'm Scott. I live in Idaho. Actually, grew up in Idaho. Army brought me up to North Carolina. I was stationed at Fort Bragg.
Oh, cool.
And but I moved back here 6 years ago and living in a little town, Hayden, Idaho.
That's cool. By the way, if I'm looking around, it's because the dog, the chief morale officer, has a guest here today with him. So I want to make sure he's not going to bite anybody's face off. He's still a puppy and he's learning how to deal with people, you know?
Yeah.
So do you live in Idaho now? Where are you at? Where are you located?
Yeah, in Hayden, Idaho.
Okay, cool, man.
Yeah, it's like about 45 minutes south of Canada, way up there.
Oh, wow. That is very far up. Okay. Yeah. So cause Idaho, I know, goes into like an L almost, formation.
It's called the Panhandle. It takes like an hour to drive across from Montana to Washington.
Wow. Yeah. So it's actually like small. Did you just see our camera move?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the dog. he's active today, man. He's active today. He's in studio having a good time.
Yeah. Is his friend a male or female?
It's a human male.
a different.
Yeah. It's actually not another dog. It's even better.
Yeah.
He's losing his mind today. But dude, that's great, man. That's really cool to hear that. Do you have I hear you also run a business, right?
Yeah, I started massage therapy about a little over five years ago, and wow. So I started doing that 4 years ago on my own. And man, with the influx of Californians that we have moving up here, this escaping, moving into this. Yeah. It's been great.
I love how, how can I say this? I'll just say it. So it's funny. You're crushing it with the Californians that are coming through. They want that comfort and they want to feel like good and everything like that. So you're just going to give that, the massages are going through the roof. You know what I mean? That's just. Yeah. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. So what else do you have on your plate? What's your story? Give us a little bit more about who Scott is. Where'd you come from? You know, how'd you get in the Army? Why'd you decide to get in the Army? What was your time like? Take us through it, man.
When my dad, he was unable to join the military. Okay. And I don't know, there's something manly about being in the Army, being a part of something that's bigger than yourself. And so it was something that I didn't really necessarily know what I wanted to do growing up, but seeing movies and being a soldier definitely was something that I knew would make my dad proud.
Yeah.
And it would make myself proud. And so I joined when I was 18. I joined the Army. I was going to be a there was a couple different options, but the recruiter talked me into being a truck driver because I was in a relationship in high school that I thought was pretty serious, and he played on that and being safe and everything. He's like, oh yeah, you'd be an up armored vehicle, you'd be able to have a cooler beer sitting in between the seats, and it'd be safe. And she was like all for it, and then I get to basic training and they're like, hey, all the 88 mics, raise your hand. He's like, one out of four of you guys statistically will, you know, it's a pretty dangerous job. I was like, oh, great. Recruiters.
Oh, so you had that cooler of beer right in the middle of you while you're fucking getting blown up, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I grew up here. I moved from Arizona when I was four and then grew up here. And then when I, so yeah, this was my life. Little town. We had one stoplight when I grew up.
Okay.
It was super nice just being able to pretty much be free. Like my parents, you know, whenever we would, during summer times, I was never home. It was just swim, hike, bike, get in trouble, and then come home when the street lights came on. But so it was really nice growing up.
You had a good hometown that you lived in, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I did.
And you went back there after you were done everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was. I was gone for 10 years. But, wow. So most of my adult life was spent over North Carolina.
Wow. That's fucking cool, man. Also, hello, Mark. Hey, Jeremy. What's up, guys?
Present.
If you guys have any questions while we're doing this, please chime in. We love it. I'm sure Scott will be you'll be fine with that too, right, Scott?
Certainly, yeah. Can we see them, or are they just audio?
No, it'll be it'll pop up on the side here. So I don't know if you see the chat option there on your screen within this view.
I mean,
if you don't,
yeah, I see it.
Okay, cool. So there's Gina. What's up, Gina? You know, we'll if anybody has any questions for you, they will ask it there, and you know, we'll make sure that we'll try to get to it. We don't always get to the questions actually, but we'll do our best to have an answer to them if possible. So all right, take us to the Army. You're in boot camp, you're going through it. What was boot camp like for you?
I was disappointed with boot camp, to be honest with you.
Just, oh shit.
You know, like what I always saw like on the movies and everything. It was a lot softer than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
You know, but I've always been athletic. I've always like, I strive very hard. Just being able to like push myself to the max. And so I thought PT was pretty easy. The hardest thing I think would be the sleep. And it just didn't make no sense to me. It was like, all we're required to give you is 4 hours of sleep. And they never said it has to be consistent. And so, and then they put us in a hot room trying to learn land navigation, and which is kind of boring. You're listening to a guy talk and it's a hot, and then you get in trouble if you fall asleep. I'm like, that made no sense to me. But but basic training, like it was really cool to see like how it represents to like, you know, hindsight looking back, the breaking down of the person and building up of a soldier.
Apparently you give the best foot massages. Wade wanted to make sure you knew that. So boot camp was a little bit disappointing. Hardest part was sleep. How's that translated into your life now? Like, what do you think has been something you carry with you now?
I gave my life to Christ 6 years ago. And so like having that same thing, how we've died in Christ and then we're raised up through Christ. It's that reminder of the old me has to die in order for a new me to be. And you know, I try to represent it as like Christ is my drill sergeant, and he is guiding me towards a better life.
Right.
And so I remember that so that
ego.
I can. Yeah. Laying down that pride.
Mm. That's fantastic, man. I'm really happy to hear that. So how'd you end up at that decision of 6 years ago? Why did you do that?
Geez, ever since I got out of the Army, it started when I got back from Iraq. I was drinking a lot. And so like it was in and out of, and then that led into suicide attempts and led into hospital visits and jail visits. And so towards the end of it, this was February 28, 2018. I got my fourth DUI and I was looking at a 10-year sentence. And I remember that night that I got arrested, my dad told me I couldn't come by the house anymore because my sisters, they were young at the time. And, it was hard for anybody to see how I was.
Yeah. Man.
And so they asked me, like, until you clean up, we can't see you anymore. So that was a hard blow. But that night I told my dad, I said, this is my prayer. It's like, I'm done. Like, I can't. God's going to have to take me away from my wife and her kids. I was married at the time, another drunk place, married her after 4 days of knowing her in person. So I was like, God's going to have to take me away from my wife and her kids. He's going to have to put me in a place where I can't drink and where I have no other choice but to follow him because I'm done with my choices. Like my choices have led me to where I'm at now. And then I wake up in jail, and it was like 2 weeks into jail where I realized that God answered all of my prayers. Like I was away from my wife and her kids. I couldn't drink and I was looking at 10 years. So it's like, what else do I have in my life that's left? And so it was at that time when I decided that I had made enough mess of my life and I had nothing left. And and then God was like, remember your prayer? And I was like, oh my gosh, you answered everything exactly. Not in the way that I wanted it, but yeah, everything was answered. And God was like, you were ready to surrender to death. You know, I am life. Are you ready to surrender to me? And so right there, I just felt like I handed him over my heart, and that was the decision. And I haven't touched a drop of alcohol since. I didn't have to serve that jail sentence. I feel like, wow, Jesus tapped the shoulder of the judge and was like, we don't need to send him there. So he gave me 4 years probation instead. Wow. And I haven't looked back.
That is powerful. I guess it brings up also something we talk about too, is like the importance of spirituality. Now, spirituality is different for different people. And you finding, you know, your way forward and finding purpose through, I guess, your beyond service is actually through God. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
That is a crazy story. can you actually take me through? I'm actually really curious about that. Why do you think, while you're in jail, do you think that, okay, because you said something interesting. You said that God's your drill sergeant, right? Mm-hmm. And from what I know, drill sergeants can be pretty tough, and they can put you through difficult situations to see how you can, you know, strive and continue forward, right? So,
yeah.
And if you can. So it's almost like God being your drill sergeant, which you make clear. Do you think he put you in that scenario in your head? Do you think he put you in that scenario to have like a challenge in your life to be able to overcome and learn from? And what did you learn from that?
I don't think he put me there, but Romans 8:28 says that he works everything for good for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So I think he uses everything that the enemy intended for bad. Oh, that's the first part of the verse. So when he uses everything that we will do and what the enemy might intend to harm us, he will use that. And I think God used that to its full extent. And so that was my hard moment. And then God, through love and grace and mercy, he showed me a better way. He said, this is where your life has been headed, because I wasn't listening to the drill sergeant at the time. I was trying to live life my way. And so then the drill sergeant part of him came out and was like, hey, this is a better way. This is how you were. Now let me show you a better way. We'll work as a team. We'll work as a unit and follow my commands, because my commands is love. Definitely his commands, wow, are love.
I guess still though, what was the thing that you learned from that very incredibly difficult situation? What did you learn from that?
That living life my way with my choices, leads to death. It leads to misery.
I mean, you're still making, okay. So you're still making the choices, but you think that you're listening to the intuition a little bit different, and the intuition, I guess you're saying like it's coming from God.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah. Okay. Read the Bible. And you know, the Ten Commandments, you know, thou shalt not kill and steal or covet. But it's more than that. It's like that.
Were you stealing?
I never really was a thief, but I definitely was a liar. I mean, I lied, right, to cover up all, you know, people,
the alcohol.
It was a shameful experience. And I lied about it a lot, which ends up making me become a liar about stupid stuff too, just to make myself, because of that low self-esteem that came from it. I lied about everything just to make myself look better.
Damn. That's tough.
Yeah. You know, the hardest thing too, I think, was learning how to have a normal life, like life that wasn't regret. And like, that was probably like the first year. And even just last week, I was thinking about it. I was like, man, I don't have anything to worry about. It's like, I don't have to regret. I don't have to say sorry. You know, every morning I wake up, I have to apologize for something that I said. I would have to worry about a judge, you know, saying, you know, determining which direction of my life I'm going to go. I like to drive when I drink. So, I mean, there was that worry too. Like, oh, what am I going to do the next time I drink? So like learning how to have a normal life, that was like the hardest part of sobriety.
Wow. So I guess waking up in that jail cell, that was the moment you were for your life. That was the moment you were saying, you know, God is now intervening. He's no longer letting me make foolish decisions. Time to leave this life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I don't think I ever really got over, cause I got kicked out of the army. I was drinking, a lot when I got back. I didn't understand it. I was 20 years old. And, so I self-referred myself to a program called, ASAP, Army Substance Abuse Program. And while in there, you sign a contract saying you won't drink. Well, I got caught drinking and I got kicked out for that. I didn't get kicked out for getting in trouble. I got kicked out in my mind for seeking help. And then when I got kicked out, I was a Chapter 9 discharge, which is, I was unrehabilitative. So like, that was a title that I'd have carried that I didn't know that I carried. Like the Army that I put my value, my worth and everything, my life into, said that I was unrehabilitative. That was a little unfair, I think.
Oh, do you still feel that way?
No.
Okay. You felt that way at the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. From the moment I got out up until that moment when I gave my life to Christ, I didn't even realize that until I brought on a new title as a child of God.
Yeah, I was about to have a conversation with you about that and ask a million questions to get you to the point to be like, oh shit, wait, that is me. That was all me. Like, that was actually the right decision. Okay, no, that's cool. I'm happy you made it there yourself, man. That's great. Seriously, that's fantastic. So Wade said, okay, so we have a couple of people here saying incredible story, awesome analogy. The analogy, I think, was the drill sergeant to the Christ is your drill sergeant. I agree. That is actually a pretty cool analogy. And Wade said, I've been to ASAP. Definitely had to humble myself being there.
That was
Tanner said that.
Tanner Montana.
Tanner Montana. Been ASAP, definitely had to help myself being there. Wade said, I've been ASAP as well, broski.
Neroski.
Oh, dude, definitely meant broski, but I don't know what Neroski is. That's pretty cool.
He corrected it in the next message.
What's that?
He corrected it in the next message.
No, I know. I put it up. But, like, that's still funny. Like, I wonder what Neroski could be. But yeah, so like, cause I my brain likes words, and made up words too, like Häagen-Dazs. Like, that's a made up name. Nobody knows. Like, a lot of people don't know that. They made that up. Häagen-Dazs, the ice cream. It's actually not even a word. they just put letters together that sounded like something. You're like, oh, I like that. Went with it. So, all right. So you found yourself in that scenario. You're in the jail cell. You find out, all right, I'm going to give my life to Christ. And then you became a massage therapist?
Well,
take us through that, bro.
That was weird because military and construction has been my background.
Okay.
And so kind of a cool story just to show just how amazing God is.
Okay.
I had lost my job and my kids' wife were, they kept saying they want to be like millionaires, you're going to be these entrepreneurs. And so kind of in a drunk, spiteful moment, probably about 2 months before this happened, I was like, all you guys do is smoke weed and play video games. Like, you're not going to be a millionaire entrepreneur unless you start now. And so I was like, this is how you do it. So I printed out a bunch of flyers, put it on all the mailboxes for snow removal, and hoping that one of the kids would jump on it. Well, one guy responds to it and they didn't want to do it. So I started removing snow for the guy. And then, so then I get arrested. I disappear. He comes to find out, where's this guy been? My, you know, snow's piling up in my driveway. Finds out I've been arrested, alcoholic. And this guy sponsors one guy a year to go to rehab. And so he decides to sponsor me.
Holy shit. What? Right? The one guy that responds to your flyer.
Yeah. That's crazy. And there's like, you know, a big neighborhood.
I got chills, dude. I literally got chills going down my neck right now. That's wild. Keep going. Keep telling the story.
And so I also was unable to get bailed out because I was a suicide risk. And I also had a flight bought to go to San Diego. So that was my secondary. If I didn't kill myself, I was just going to escape. It was a one-way flight. And so my parents told the judge this, or told my lawyer, this lawyer told the judge. And then, so I had no bail. But because this guy has had a reputation with helping people, he was able to get me bailed out under the premise that I go to rehab. Wow. So he pays for my rehab, gets me bailed out. But while I was in rehab, I started having dreams I was going to be a massage therapist. And it's like, no, like that's weird. Like, you know, that's a girl's job. That's not a man's job there. And so then I get out of rehab, I go back into construction. I had like 3 months before my sentencing was coming up.
Working out those hands.
Yeah. I also don't have my driver's license. So that was a big role that played an effect on like all of my whole life. And so I ride my bike over. I had a week off of work for 4th of July, and I ride my bike over to the NIC, which is a local school around here. And it was only a 2 mile bike ride, and they don't offer it. But then told me about a guy over at, I'm sorry, I read somebody's comment. They told me about a school that was over in Pulse Falls, and they said 10 mile bike ride. I'm like, no, not doing that. But then God was like, what else are you doing? You have a week off of work. He's like, I've been prompting you for this. And I was like, fine, whatever, I'll go. So I make the 10 mile bike ride over there. And then they look at my GI Bill and they're like, well, we're not worried about getting paid by the government. So you can start tomorrow. We have an opening every 4 months and we have one opening tomorrow. I was like, all right, God, you've paved the way like all this time, got me out of jail, put me in rehab, set this guy up. His name is Rick. Got me paid for with the rehab. Like he has totally done exactly what he said he was going to do. He's going to take care of my life and he's going to deliver my steps. And so I started school and I loved it. Anatomy, physiology, kinesiology. Like I loved learning about the body and a little bit of a nerd came out of me and been doing it ever since.
Wow. Wow. Wild. Yeah. It's funny. There's another guy who was a massage therapist. Oh my God. Micah. Oh yeah.
He is one too.
Oh, and the guy that's here right now behind the computer screen and camera, is also a massage therapist. But
okay,
Micah, he's a MARSOC vet. He also is a licensed massage therapist. He doesn't do it anymore, but he loved it. He loved it a lot. He loved doing it because he's like, dude, I felt like every time I was helping people out, like I could feel them like changing like their body and like getting relaxed finally. And I'm helping them to that point. He's like, I got a lot out of that. It's almost like an energy transfer type thing. And I was like, wow, that is wild to think about because you really are putting in your energy, literally your energy to like help that person to knead through their muscles to help them relax. You know,
that was another small world moment with Micah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah.
They're family members.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We didn't even know. We went out to Montana for one of our retreats that we host, and he was one of the guys there, and I didn't know him from anybody. And you know, we bonded over a quick little conversation before we opened up, and my dad actually mentioned, he's like, oh, I found out that you met my Micah. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, Micah, he's your cousin, he's over there. And I was like, oh shit. So like he's actually married to my actual cousin, so that's how we
figured that out.
But I mean, there was 10 of us that we got down there in Montana, and for one of them to be somebody that was related to me, it just blew my mind.
It's crazy. Isn't that cool?
Small world.
Yeah. Going to say hello to a couple people. Hey, Delusive. Hey, what's up, Mark? And also, Wade said that you are a Spartan race legend.
You guys know the Spartan race? Well, yeah. You can actually see some of them in the background, some of my medals.
I can see the medals. Let's blow this up, actually, and make sure we can maybe zoom in on those. Dude, look at that. So wait, tell us about your Spartan races and why do you do them?
These are the trophies, like first to third place.
Holy shit. Okay.
And this was last year. This one right here is pretty cool because I got second in the nation two seasons ago. Three seasons ago now. We're already into the season. But
So you're a hoss. You're a little bit of a hoss, ain't you?
Yeah, I that's why I thought basic training was kind of disappointing because I've always valued physical fitness and pushed myself to the max. Like I've passed out at a few races. I don't know.
Shit.
But yeah, I actually tore my ACL A year ago, May 29th on Memorial Day last year.
Oh.
And that, yeah, that put me, that's why there, the rest of that little wall is empty, because that was set up for last year.
Damn. Yeah.
So,
are you going to keep it empty to remind yourself of like the time that you tore your ACL?
It's, I don't have to remind myself. It's still affecting me.
Yeah, it sucks.
It did at first, man. You know, but, you know, I guess always like searching for something, you know, military was my identity. And then I gave my life to Christ, and then, but I still was hanging on to certain things. And then racing became my identity. Like it was a huge pride moment. Like I didn't know how much value I put into it until I tore my ACL, because like I walk up to a race here and people would be like, crap, he's here. Like at least we could shoot for second. And, and so like, It was fun to be like the fastest guy in Kootenai County. It was fun to be known inside the Spartan world around the nation. But,
did you get sponsored and stuff like that? I mean, like, yeah, how does that work?
Sponsored from 2019, and then 2020 was weird. But yeah, I was sponsored for 4 years, I guess.
Wow. What does that look like? Do you get paid and shit?
It wasn't enough to make a living, but it made my travel expenses pretty much paid for.
Wow.
So yeah, that was nice. Yeah. And wow. 1 year I had a really big sponsor.
What's up, Sam?
And he, so I just would call the HR person and say, because I got on this TV show with NBC for the Spartan Ultimate Team Challenge.
Yeah.
And I was their captain. And so that led into like this sponsorship of, I just called this company's HR and be like, hey, I want to do this race. And then like an hour or two later, I have flight bought, hotel purchases, all these vouchers. And then I just show up and go. Like it was pretty cool feeling. But then getting second in the nation, that was like a pretty surreal feeling too. It's like, dude, I'm the second fastest 30 to 35 year old in the nation. Like,
okay, but like, how close were you to the fastest?
I was 2 points. So they go off of tournaments, a point base off of a tournament. So I was 2 points behind him.
Oh,
yeah. So that could have been 30 seconds. I injured my calf, and then so I went from first, and then I injured my calf, and then I got a third place finish at one of the races, and that put me in the second.
Okay, yeah. So like,
damn.
So like, yeah, you would have been number one.
Yeah, yeah.
That would carry me a little bit. I'd be like, I'll take second, knowing that I was gonna be first.
Well, it's almost worse though. I mean, because it was so close. And you know what I mean? Like it was like, yeah, it was pretty cool to like be 2 points away. But at the same time, it's like, it's only 2 points. Like in my mind, I'm like, okay, if I would just push through the pain just a little bit more, like if I would have taken 30 seconds off my total race, then I might have, you know, been first, you know.
I'll tell you what, your medals say second, right? But everybody else knows that you would have been first. Even the guy that was in first is sitting there being like, oh my goodness, thank goodness that he hurt himself and I'm first, but I was gonna lose.
There you go. Yeah.
Wow. So has I guess you did a couple things here. So it's really important to give a highlight, right? So you had a downfall, you hit rock bottom,
mm-hmm.
You're in a jail cell, and you're like, dude, I need to change my fucking life. By the way, I would never guess by looking at you that you were chilling out in jail and you struggled with alcohol. So that's a testament to your working out. I'm also a big fan of working out and getting active for, you know, better brain activity. I mean, that's just proven. Like if you are working out, you are moving, you are actually like getting your body moving, your brain will move better, right? Like you will think better, you'll think clearer, you'll be able to focus better. So love that. So it's almost like you're working out in your entire life, your whole life. You actually mentioned it. My whole life, I was very into, you know, physical activity. That's been something that you could always fall back on as like a point of like, this is who I am. I'm an athlete and I can overcome, you know, physical challenges with my athleticism and my ability to grind forward. Is that something like that one point? Is that about right for you?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So you're in, because go back to jail cell, you sit there, you have this coming to Jesus moment, literally coming to Jesus moment where you're like, all right, I'm going to give my whole life over to Christ and just like say prayers, and however I feel the intuition, the answer that comes to me through my intuition, that's God speaking to me. Because you actually, a couple of times that you were talking about it, it's almost like you were having conversations with God, and you're and how I imagine that, I'm going to interpret to people, is like, it's actually happening right here, right? You're like, okay, I'll do that. Like, you literally are saying out loud, okay, I'll do that. And it's like, that is you listening to what is being said inside of your mind to go and just do and trust it and trust your intuition, right? So you go forward, you become a massage therapist, but all while doing this, you're also like, I'm not going to give up being an athlete. I'm not going to give up my running, my hardcore going. And that says a lot about your fortitude, by the way. So you have a sense of fortitude that is sits behind you. And that's something that's fucking awesome. I just heard, it's reminding me of something I heard this week. So I was in Delaware giving a presentation, this woman, Monet. So if you're in Delaware, I'm giving a shout out to Monet. Look up Monet. She's a therapist in Delaware. This lady is a real one. She is fucking awesome. So she's like, listen, if I can give anybody one piece of advice in this room, it's like a room of like 100 people. If I can give anybody in this room a piece of advice, it is that when your arm breaks, it will heal itself. Your body was made to do that. Your body was made to be resilient. Your mind can do the same thing. You can heal. It is possible. Your mind is capable of it. You have to allow it. How you choose to do that is fine. I'll try to learn it with you so we can learn how to move forward together. You do it through your actual working out, through Christ, through your spirituality. You're making your body stronger, your spirit stronger, and thereby making yourself just overall a better and stronger person. Now, are you married at all and everything?
No.
No? Well, brother, I hope that you continue to work hard to find that lady who's going to be able to fit into that model and mold for you, man, because you really have changed your life, and it's very evident. That's awesome. That is so cool. Did I sum everything up properly, by the way?
Yeah. You're right. Because it's not an audible voice that you hear from God.
Understood.
Yeah. So yeah, you explained it right.
Cool. Wow. That is, and also I think the fortitude thing too, though, working out, right? That's important. Wade's doing that a lot now too. Right. Wade's been, do you see Wade and his like Instagram posts and shit?
Yeah.
Dude, it's hilarious. I love it.
Yeah, I can't remember what he did. He's like
big arm, little head or whatever. He just said recently. Fucking hilarious. Dude.
Yeah, I texted him the other day and he was like, made this story. He was like, oh, bad form, but he did like 320 pounds or something like that on his squats. I'm like, dude, that's a lot, man.
That's a lot. Bad form, but I'm still going to do it because I'm fucking Hulk for some reason. Yeah. No, but I guess when it comes to your working out, you're really a runner. You're an endurance athlete. Do you do a lot of stretching too?
No. Damn. But you know what? I just started doing, that could be part of the reason why.
Yeah, ACL issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just started doing, so I kind of recently, I did meet a girl, 350 pounds, he said, no biggie.
He said 350, not 320, 350, no biggie. Whatever, dude.
That's funny. But I did recently meet a girl and it's really like, she loves Jesus too. And we're walking in this life together. And it's really like been revamping a lot of the way that I see life, because instead of just reacting and doing things, I'm like starting to think things through.
Cool.
And that's really, I think she's playing a huge role in my life. So it's really cool. But, I started doing just slowing down a little bit and so I have been doing a lot more hip mobility exercises and a lot more stretching. I just have a lot of therapy. Yeah. And so with that hip mobility stuff, and it's like really super lightweight stuff, it's been freeing up my lower back and my hip pain.
So important, dude.
Yeah.
God. Bro, I don't have an adductor muscle in my inner thigh, my right leg. So lower back pain has been my life since I was like 18 years old, not even just 17 years old. So because I tore it when I was wrestling and I never got it. I didn't tell anybody. I tore it, lost the MCL during the process, wrapped up inside the muscle, continued to walk. And my doctor was like, I don't know how the fuck you're walking, dude. Like I genuinely, he said to me, I don't know. Good news. You don't have cancer. Cause that was apparently an option. Cause I had a big bulging, like muscle in my right next to my testicles. So they thought I might've had testicular cancer. And, And he's like, good news, you don't have cancer. I'm like, what? I literally turned on my desk. That's a fucking option, dude. and he was like, yeah, well, we didn't want to say anything because of that reaction right there. You know, like you're 17 testicular cancer. That would be a shock. But you're going to have a lot of pain in your future. So good luck, kid. And I was like, can we repair it? He was like, no, man, it would do more damage than good because you kept it away from us for so long, over a year. So the muscle ended up, and I kept on running and moving and pushing myself through this I'll never forget. It was so much pain, so much pain. They're like, the muscle formed over your MCL that was connected to your adductor muscle. So I now have a missing ligament in my knee, plus also a fucked up leg. So it's basically like a meat prosthetic that I walk on every day. So my lower back is always an issue.
Dude, at least they told you about the possibility of cancer afterwards. Claire can attest to this one. When I went for one of my migraines, lasted like 10 days. It was insane. And I went to the hospital. And first of all, I didn't go to the hospital first.
I'm already laughing.
This is so great.
He's such a good storyteller.
Not great at the same time. So I was telling my wife, I was like, this is like, this migraine was lasting me forever. She's like, you need to go to urgent care. I was like, all right, fine. So I drove myself to urgent care and I get there and they do like, the guy's like, looks at me and he's like
bouncing the testes.
He said, you might be having a brain aneurysm right now.
He wasn't doing the testes.
No. He held me up here. He didn't do any blood tests or anything. He fucking held me up here and he's like, yep, might be a brain aneurysm. And I was like,
what the
and he's fuck? Like, if you want to wait around, I can get EMS to take you over to the hospital. I was like, I'll fucking take myself, thank you very much. So I fucking get in my car. I get in my car and I'm talking to my wife and I'm telling her everything that's going on, and I'm driving over to the hospital and I sit and I go up to the hospital and I was like, they're like, hey, checking in. And I was like, yeah, I might be having a brain aneurysm. And they're like, okay, take a seat in the fucking waiting room. I was in the waiting room for almost 3 hours. It was 2.5 hours. And they were like, Anthony Rocco? And I was like, yeah, that's me. And I get up and like, I go in there and we get some blood tests going, whatever. They take me back. So, they pumped me with this shit that I fucking hated, 'cause it made me high as all hell. But it took away the pain, so it was kind of okay. And then I was waiting for these blood tests to come back, and this fucking doctor comes up to me and he's like, hey, look, we found like cancer, trails like in your blood test. And they're like, we want to take you back for a couple more tests to find out more about it. And I was like, what? Like, what? So we go back and we get some more tests done, and the dude comes back and he's like, Oh yeah. It wasn't cancer.
Oh my God.
Dude. And like this whole time I'm like, I'm fucking high as shit off of whatever they gave me. They called it the cocktail. And I like, this guy just told me cancer, and I'm like,
while you're high,
did I tell my wife this? And I don't remember if I did. I think I might have told her, and like, she might have been freaking out. I don't know if she's still in here, but she can chime in. But yeah, that was fine. At least you got, hey, we checked for cancer, it wasn't there, just letting you know. But I got like, bro, you might have cancer.
Well,
we're going to look at more.
I was also a minor. So I was 17 when everything was happening. Well, actually, no, I was 19 when I was getting tested. 18, 19. So they just told my parents. They were talking to my parents about it. I don't know. But they definitely could have told me. You're right. I don't know why they didn't.
Tell me.
Probably because my dad thought I had cancer from the rip. He didn't say anything. No. So I was sitting down in front of the TV in my family room. I was playing with my dog. And I'm like, I'm literally flexing flexing that little bubble or that ball that's now I know it's a muscle. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I showed my dad, and it literally sits up like that off my leg. I'm not fucking joking. This is my leg. It sits up. It's wild. So my dad's like, yeah, we're gonna go to the hospital right now. I was like, all right, cool, man. That's fine, I guess. So he probably told everybody along the way, like, don't fucking say anything if it's cancer. Like, let's just confirm it first, you know? So I'm grateful that he chose that and to do that. Because I would have been not happy. I would have been not happy. I'm not as formidable in my mind at the time that I am now. So definitely I'm grateful for that.
But I did find out that I didn't have cancer and that I didn't have a brain aneurysm, but they didn't tell me what the fuck was going on.
Stress.
So. Probably.
Dude, probably stress. They said
it's probably some stress shit.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'll go home. All right, later.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go home with my stress then. Dude, oh wow. So it's not about us, it's about you, Scott. So what here we go. She said he did not tell me. I had a nurse friend look into the blood work results and she told me about a cancer possibility. I asked Rocco about it, and at that time he was like, "No, I don't have cancer." That's as far as that went.
I'm not surprised, because I probably wouldn't tell her until like I knew for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly.
Because she's a worrier, man. Like, she'd fucking freak out. Her history speaks for itself, man. Like, I wouldn't be able to do that.
But wow. Okay. So, Scott, take us through, what are your future plans, brother? Like, where do you see Scott? You know, give us the 5, 10, you know, 15 year plan. If you even have one. If you don't, that's fine. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't know that far in the future, but a 5-year plan is there's a hopes to, you know, be married, start a family.
Cool.
You know, I bought my house, June of 2020. So going on 4 years now. So yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like I'm ready and prepared, mentally, physically, and like in this world too.
Spiritually. Yeah.
Spiritually. So yeah, that's a hope. And we'll see. I know my job, the girl that I'm seeing now, she's not a huge fan of my job, and totally understandable. So it might be a career change.
Why is she not cool with, massage therapy?
There's the touching of other, the touching the person says,
That's not about you. That's about Steve's. Our stream's delayed. It's about.
Oh, it is delayed. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's not about.
You know, there's a. You know, she explained it very, very well. She's like, I want to be touched by you like that, and we are respecting biblical boundaries by not doing that until we get married, and she's like, but other people can, and I want to be touched by you like that, and it's just. I'm transitioning into right now, and it was kind of cool too, because even before I met her, I started leaning into having I started leaning into more of like PT style massage instead of like doing, because I mean, even what I do now is I just shove my elbow into somebody's knot and then work it till it gets released, and then
yeah,
and they have better range of motion. But there's a guy in town right now actually who does he said he's not a physical therapist, he's not a chiropractor, and he's not a massage therapist, but he's also all of it. And so I'm learning how to work with him and do what he does. And he just comes in, sees somebody for a minute, gets them released, like with their clothes on. And he's just knocking people out, just helping people in more of like a PT style. And that's more where I'm leaning towards. So.
You know what? So, I respect it. If that's a decision that you come to and that you're okay with too, I mean, who are we to say anything about that? That's cool. That's cool. I'm happy you guys had that conversation together openly, and you guys are accepting that with each other. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing that's really cool about her. So she, instead of saying, nope, this isn't a thing, you know, this isn't going to work, she's like, right. Hey, this is something that is a real thing for me. And how can we work through it?
Yeah. So, how can we find a medium ground here? You're not going to totally leave the field overall. You're going to find another route and another angle in it. You know, that's completely cool. That's fair.
Yeah.
That makes sense. You know, I actually also hear things like, I've heard of other couples because I can understand it from this perspective. So I have to do a lot of networking a lot, right? Like I have to be out all the time, see people. I mean, I haven't been doing it as much in the past, like 6 months, because we have so much paperwork here at Project Reef that has to get done. Plus my other thing too. Like there's just so many moving parts happening right now that I can't be out, and it's actually not helping us from a funding perspective, which kind of sucks. You know, I've heard of other in that networking scene, wives or husbands who are like, why are you out doing that? Like, why are you out all night and you can't come home? Right. And it's like, well, I'm actually built business is relationships. Relationships are business. So you have to build those relationships with people. And the only way you do that is by being in front of them and talking to them, right? Networking is a great form, especially for sales, to build up that relationship with those people and build that trust. So it's hard for a lot of people to understand that. But if you're in like, some people end up leaving that job field to not network anymore because the wife is like, look, I'm not cool with it anymore. You got to come home. Because it might lead to you build a relationship that's, you know, not business related, you know, that also does happen. So I can absolutely understand how, you know, if she's not comfortable with like nude, you know, massage that you might be doing now and then transitioning into a new way, especially if you're doing it for athletes, it also fits you perfectly for that realm as well. Cause you're a fucking athlete. So that's really cool. That's
You could shift over to something along similar lines, like physical therapy.
Yeah. And that's what I'm looking towards. So like good. 5-year goal is to be married, start a family, and then to work towards that, and then have that career shift into doing more physical therapy kind of stuff.
Oh, cool.
Would you go back to school at all for it?
No, I mean, there would be some classes that I'll take, but not an actual conventional school.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. The only thing you really need a license for is to call it PT. And also you need a license to be able to have people take your clothes off in front of you. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, not really in front of you, but like to work on people with their shirt off.
Right.
That's what you need a license for. So this guy here, he doesn't even have, a license. He's been in the field for 45 years. He started out as a exercise science and then just developed his own technique during those 45 years of experience. And now he's training me. So like, I really feel like God is again leading things in a different direction, because I started that before I met her, and then I meet her, she's not cool with it. I'm like, cool, I'm already working on this. And she's like, wow, this is amazing. What I thought was a deal breaker actually seems to more confirm what I already feel. And it's like, cool.
Good. All right. That's fine. Not like you need that from anywhere, anybody. Think for yourself, you know, but that makes a lot of sense. And that's cool that you're respecting those boundaries. Give us some advice, brother. What's something that you've learned? Cause we're coming to the hour in another like 13 minutes, and this is going by so quick, actually. It's kind of wild how quick these things go when you're having great conversations. Yeah. I want to hear from you though. And I think it's important to hear from you. I'll start it out like this. Give us a quote that you love, that you kind of like remind yourself of. Do you have one?
The only thing that the first thing that comes to my mind is it's more of a scripture, not a quote. It's Galatians 2:20, and it says how I live my life, and how it's Galatians 2:20 says, I get a brain fart when I'm on camera. I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet it is not I that lives, but Christ who lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the grace of the Son of God, who gave himself for me who loves me and gave himself for me. And like, to me, that's like, even though I'm living my life my best way, I'm living it through Christ, following that drill sergeant's instructions instead of thinking that my way is better. Like going into the military, I wouldn't know how to train myself, but yet that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to train myself in this life. And now I listen to his instructions. And so the life I live now, I live by the grace of the Son of God who loves all of us and gave himself up for all of us. And
do you translate that? How's that translated into like your everyday?
It helps me to stay humble. So, and through that humility, it helps me to slow down. And like, instead of just reacting, I can respond.
You know, makes you a better listener too, huh?
Yeah, because I'm not much of a. I'm definitely an action taker. It's like somebody says do it, and I don't even research it. I just go head first and learn along the way. But
that's how I am too, actually.
Yeah, it gets you in some trouble, doesn't it? Sometimes.
I don't know. Maybe it used to. Not really anymore for me. I, as much of an action taker as I am, I feel as if I let my values and my morals lead my actions. So I don't really struggle too much with the, the idea and concept of, oh, this is going to be a wrong thing to do. I think the only thing that's wrong is not doing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and I know I'm not going to do something to harm others. I know I'm not going to do something to, you know, that's going to be a negative towards, you know, intentionally, at least towards someone. If it is, that's why I tell people a lot, like, yo, feel comfortable to come talk to me. We just had, for example, yesterday, we had in the morning, Dan and I had a call with one of our guys, who wanted to talk about drinking on retreats. And like, he's like, look, man, I think we should, you know, allow, and we're like, no, dude, we're not going to do that. We are moving away from it. We're completely, there was one time that we allowed it. We learned from that. We're not going to do it again.
Yeah.
Number two, we allowed it one night at a retreat because it was a guy's birthday. And we asked everyone there, including the guy who's sober, if it was okay if people drank, you know, and he was like, okay with that. But we're really moving towards a strict, absolutely zero alcohol on our retreat, zero anything on our retreats. Well, the only thing that we will allow is, especially if you have the medical card, is like marijuana. But you know, that's, I mean, we're moving towards that kind of realm, in that realm, because we really want to make sure it's a healing experience for people in a sober mindset to face your demons, and demons meaning decisions you made or unmade, or did not make, you know, because that's really the thing that weighs heavy on your brain are thoughts, and thoughts are decisions, and decisions are thoughts. So, that's kind of why I believe in the only thing that is wrong is not doing.
That's good. Cool. I like that. I can take a pull from that. I like that.
Cool. Good, man. I love that. Cause that's, I feel like, action oriented person to another action oriented person. That's kind of, you know, don't be afraid. Just move.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's special, man. I love that. Anything else you got? How about what you've learned from relationships? I mean, you said that you were a liar at one point. How are you trying not to be that liar anymore? And how, also, this is important, because maybe something to think about in your healing journey, forget the shame that you had, right? And learn that you're a new person and you don't have to change who you are necessarily, or your thoughts necessarily, as long as like you're staying true to yourself and good morals and values, because you don't want to be controllable, you know? So how do you manage your shame?
Well, that's actually pretty easy, because who Christ says I am, all of that is gone. Like there is no shame. There's no condemnation. He says I'm a Christ, I'm a child of God, and I'm a Christ follower. And who he sees me as is he sees Christ, who is perfect, who never did anything wrong, and who loves. And so that's who God says that I am. And so I believe that, but my biggest thing is like staying in community and focusing on strength. So like you're saying, you don't have to change who you are. You just focus on the things that you're strong at. And then the weaknesses, just like I learned through my ACL, we get 10% like sympathy strength. Like you can work out one leg and the other leg will gain strength just from that one workout. That was something I never knew. So it's like, if you focus on your strengths, the weaknesses will become stronger, and you don't have to try to not do something. You just focus on the things that you do want to do.
Wow. I like that a lot. You know what that actually sounds like? That sounds like, there's this philosophy, the philosopher who talks about, by the way, go ahead, get out of here.
Yeah, I got a prior obligation. I got to jump out at,
see you, buddy.
But it was wonderful talking to you, everybody else. Peace out. I'll see you guys next week. We'll finish up here.
But yeah, it reminds me of a philosophy that really I found to be pretty amazing, which is when you sacrifice, right? Sacrifice and movement and action. So no, you can't close it. You can't close it. There's a, my bad. So when you take action, and you are men being sacrificial animals that we are, you actually end up finding yourself through service and through action of serving others. You actually end up making yourself better just by doing that. And that is, I think, one of the more powerful things to remember, especially for men, you know, is like, hey, listen, you know, our purpose in this life is to suffer. Like we are supposed to be the ones that do that because that makes the world around us better, right? I'm talking about all types of suffering. So suffering from the perspective of like, even the guys who are out there building our cities, you know, like the men who are fighting on the front lines, you know, the dad that's working, you know, three jobs to feed his family and to keep the roof above their heads and things like that, right? You know, men are sacrificial animals in that way. Now, of course, in our modern day, women as well, you know, add to that too through the job perspective. And then they come home and like they have to do all the other things too with the husband, right? It's a give and take, and it's like changing and the modern family's moving. But men specifically are born inherently to sacrifice, right? That is like what they are born to do. And they find themselves through that. And it sounds like you're doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Ayn Rand said the sacrificial animal thing, by the way. She said men are inherently sacrificial animals. That was Ayn Rand. So it's one of her few quotes and philosophies that I 100% buy into.
Okay. Okay. Who was that?
Ayn Rand. So she is – here, hang on. She's one of the philosophers from the World War One and World War Two era. Okay. And – you know, she talks a lot. She's an incredible thinker. She is genuinely an incredible thinker. She's all about capitalism, all about, you know, if you improve yourself, make yourself better, you improve others inherently. Which I think is true to a point. I think she was close to developing a almost perfect philosophy. It's just that some of them are a little bit too selfish, I think, and a little bit too, harsh on not service, but yeah, I guess it is kind of service, right? Because she said like, oh, gain all the wealth in the world that you possibly can, because then just naturally you're going to be able to give. And no matter how, if you have so much, even a little bit is a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not true though, is it? Like, that's actually not true. You know, it depends on how you're giving. What are you giving to, you know? Yeah. So anyway, you know, she's a pretty incredible, philosopher. There's actually a few of them. I'm actually reading all female right now from that time period. All female philosophers. It's my next book I'm going to be reading. The visionaries. So yeah, I'm excited, man. It's Arndt, Beauvoir, Rand, and Weil. So I'm going to, which is Weil, W-E-I-L, Weil. So she was okay. German. So the W is a V in German. but yeah, so I'm excited to read that because it's going to be an amalgam of both sides of thought, you know, communist and capitalist, and like the differences of the two. And I already have a very strong understanding of, you know, communism aside from capitalism. And I know the pitfalls and the strengths of both. It's just that, you know, me personally, from a philosophy standpoint, I'm not talking politics, from a philosophical standpoint, I am capitalist in that way. I think that communism is a very far-fetched methodology. I think it's great. I actually do think communism is great when it's for small groups, and we're talking about like ancient groups, like 160, you know, tribes of 160 or, you know, 200 or even 1,000 people or whatever, in old ancient tribes, you know, we all survive by giving to each other and sharing amongst ourselves. I mean, 100%, that is a great way to survive, right? Like that is pure communism with a little bit of capitalism thrown in with trade, right? With other places. But, you know, as you get bigger and bigger and bigger, it's harder to, trust that your government is going to care about you. And we see that, you know, throughout time, but what the consequences of that are. So anywho, I'm not going to get into that because that's politics at that point. We almost tripped over that. But I hope that made sense. I hope that makes sense. Okay, cool. I'll have to see if you are interested in books and reading more from that perspective, I'm your guy. Hit me up.
Okay, perfect. I'm working on that. Since I tore my ACL, I read four bigger books.
Cool.
That's something I've always wanted to do, is be more of a reader and less of a TV watcher, because, you know, I want to feed the brain and not like dull the brain.
Yeah, man. I actually, TV, I just naturally a lot of the time don't have time for it. I did just finish. It took us like months to finish, if not like a probably like half a year to or longer to finish Vikings. So I did finish that. That was great.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Nice.
Great. But I am also I love to read more than anything else, and I love to listen to podcasts and books that challenge me. That's my thing. I don't know. I'm one of those types. I get stuck in my head too much actually sometimes. Mm. Do you ever find yourself doing that?
Yeah. Yeah.
What happens when you're thinking? Shut up, switch. What happens when you're thinking?
There's actually a lot of good that comes from it, because you know I can problem solve and find solutions. But sometimes I end up laying in bed way too long.
Dude, you want to hear something? You're getting me going now. Shit, this is an interview about you, but we're just talking, I guess, at this point. So something that's really fucking cool. So the founder of Bentley. I think it's Bentley. I can't remember, but I know it's one of like the very. Who builds the engines? It is Bentley. Bentley's like the best engine builder in the world, right? Yeah. So anyway, so this guy starts his engine company and starts building up these amazing cars and shit, right? He hardly works on the engine itself. What he does instead is he spends a lot of time with his horses. He spends a lot of time on his farm. He spends a lot of time doing things that he loves to do that relax him, because what he does is he actually is thinking about the problems without thinking about them. He's letting his intuition work. So by like a great example is like you and I, we both really enjoy working out. Like we like to work out. So when I'm working out, I'm not really thinking about anything. When I'm doing jujitsu, I'm not really thinking about anything. When I'm fighting, I'm not really thinking about anything, right? But when I'm lifting a weight, I'm not really thinking about anything, but I am. I am working through things. I am thinking about things. It's just in a different format. And it's all. And he would get better ideas from doing something completely different from the actual task at hand. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's what I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, able to shut things down, because when you overthink, you tend to – you're doing that exactly. You're overthinking.
Yeah.
And you're – but yeah, when you're just like when you're trying to think of something that you want to tell somebody and then you remember it at midnight.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, hate that. That is a great example though. It's like it comes to you later, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
So that kind of goes back to focusing on your strengths, that everything else lifts up with it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Great callback. Fantastic. That's actually real shit. I guess that is literally an example of, so he might not be the best. Okay. He's not the best at that time with that problem. He doesn't know the answer to it. So he's not the best at it. So he's going to go focus on his strengths, and maybe he'll come up with the answer to that problem by focusing on the strengths. He's making his weaknesses stronger. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude,
I couldn't quit drinking by trying to quit drinking. It was when I quit drinking is when I was able to quit drinking.
Explain that to me. You just repeated yourself.
Yeah, it really is. But when I was trying to quit drinking, I was focusing on quitting drinking. It kind of like I was snowboarding. I use this. I sometimes will public speak, and I was snowboarding and going through the trees. And I looked at the tree that I did not want to hit, and I was like, "Don't hit the tree! Don't hit the tree!" And I am smacking the tree instead of looking where I wanted to go. I was looking where I didn't want to go. So like, when I was trying to quit drinking, I was looking at the tree. I was looking at the alcohol, and I would make it a week, a month maybe, but I would always end up going back because I was like white knuckling it. I was focusing on it. But when I started focusing on my strengths, like running or working or the things that I love doing, I didn't focus on the alcohol, and it fell away by the wayside naturally.
Mm.
Does that make sense now?
That makes a lot of sense.
So yeah. Wow. So again,
that makes so much sense actually, that it was actually something different than what I thought you were going to say. So for me, when you were saying what you were saying, I thought you were going to say, like, I made the decision. I just made the decision and stuck with the decision. But it's actually, you went into more of the, not the decision and I made the decision. You went into the process of how you get through it. How do I actually stay on my decision?
Yeah.
You, in the way is you focus, dude, that's fucking actually borderline brilliant, by the way. I would argue that is brilliant. That is a very simple, which means you understand it so well, very simple way to put it. So when you can break down very complex topics into a simple format, that's actually fucking brilliance at work. And it means you understand it and you can teach other people how to get through it, which is why you become such a good sponsor to other people, I guess, especially for sobriety. Wow. That, you're actually blowing my mind right now with that. I never thought of it that way. It's making me think of something else that, wow, that's actually so simple. You just need to, okay, so let's go to this. So you have an addiction, you have something you're trying to change, you have a, you want to read more, right?
Yeah.
Take us through, now that you understand how to do it, how are you going to do that?
So what I did was I shut off my internet. So I eliminated the options. And this was a little bit harder for me because watching TV has like very low consequences. So I shut off the internet, eliminated the distractions, and then I was left with a book. And so then I just picked up the book. I thought of tomorrow. I was like, am I going to regret watching a movie or am I going to regret not reading? And so I was like, tomorrow when I wake up in the morning, I probably won't even remember what movie I read or watched, but I will regret not reading. And so I started to, that's how I picked up reading. A little bit different.
No, that's fucking great. You are now able to apply. This is what you figured out in your life. You figured out how to do things better to improve yourself. Mm-hmm. You figured out that there's a part of your brain that you grew where there's a pain in starting something new. And you figured out a way to help you go through that pain. You figured out a way to literally take what could seem insurmountable odds and turn those insurmountable odds into a practical plan through that philosophy that you've developed.
Yeah, that's well explained.
That's fucking wild, brother. You got to give yourself a lot of credit for that. That's some humble shit that you've actually, by humbling yourself, you've really come up with a lot of powerful things to get yourself through. That's incredible, actually. Wow. Because, you know, I've heard people, this includes Wade too. And Wade, I think, is Wade's one of those guys that's like really good at coming up with like those short little one quips and shit. He's fucking hilarious with that. And like he actually recently through his growth, and he's still growing and stuff like that, we're actually having right now we're having a debate about pride. I am anti-pride always. I think pride is the worst thing to have in the world. And I have actually better examples and arguments as to why I believe that, and why humility and being humble is the only way you should like go. Because I'm not attached to anything, right? If Project Refit failed, I would be upset and I would be hurt. But I wouldn't let it ruin me. Like if I had pride, too much pride in it, it would ruin me. And it would destroy me, right? I would feel victimized. I would feel all these things. So, but Wade said something recently that was also fucking brilliant. And I actually repeat it now to people about Project Refit. He was like, you know, this is what Project Refit is. He said it around a fire at a retreat, actually. He's like, listen, guys, this is what Project Refit is. These guys, he pointed to Dan and I, or me. I don't think Dan was at this one. Dan wasn't at this one. He pointed at me. He's like, these guys, including Dan, believed in me when I didn't believe in me. And now it's my turn to believe in you when you don't believe in you.
I like that.
Dude, that is our organization. And by the way, Wade had a major part in the success of our organization from an early on standpoint, even when he was struggling. You know, like the idea of the radio check and how we do it live on Mondays and Friday, or on Mondays, and we're private on Fridays. We used to do it 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Wade was the one that came up with the idea. So it became one of our major programs, right? Where we had this buddy check-in that we do at 9 p.m. because he needed it. He was actually helping people while he was also in pain himself.
Wow.
Wild. Yeah. It's a strong motherfucker, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was also able to take it when he was lying, especially he tried lying to me, and I would always know, like, you're fucking lying right now, bro. And he would eventually be like, yeah, I am. And like, and that kind of trust that we built together, it allows me to know that even if I wasn't here, this organization would continue forward because of people like him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, dude, I love what you just described to us. That was such a gift. Such a gift. Unbelievable. So you quit drinking when you decided to not drink, and the way you did it was by focusing on, and it's not even that you ignored it. It's not like you're ignoring that you have this issue. In fact, you know you have the issue so well that you wanted to go make something better instead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know what people tell me now, like even people who've been sober for 15 years, like, oh, it never gets easier. And I'm like, why? Like, that's a miserable way to live. I was like, what, you know, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm staying sober. Like, yeah, that's the problem. And it's like, stop trying to be sober.
That's it. Yeah. You know, it's counterintuitive. You know, it's counterintuitive because what people would then do is like, well, if I'm not trying to stay sober, then I'm going to go drink. And it's like, no, that means you just never actually got through that. You're still struggling with the problem. You're not even in a new headspace. You did not kill that old self of yours. You did not kill your ego from drinking. Yeah. Kill that ego. Stop being a sober alcoholic. Just be an alcoholic that doesn't drink anymore and fucking, you know, is a runner, you know, is reading, is improving themselves to become something else, right? Yeah. Like that is, don't even think about it.
Right. And I stopped trying to figure out why, you know, like people who are allergic to peanuts, they don't have to know why. They just know that they're allergic to peanuts and it'll kill them. So they stay away from it. It's like, stop trying to figure out why and just be like, all right, well, that's going to kill me. Let me find something else.
Treat it like an allergy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God damn. Pardon my language. That is wild, bro. That is wild. I curse a lot. And I know that one was, that can be a little tough for Christians. So I don't want
to
insult. But genuinely, that is... dang, dude, that is wild. I love that. Why do I love that so much? I think you're helping me actually right now. I think that's why. I think you're helping me, honestly, because, you know, of course, we all struggle with things. I have my own things that I struggle with, and like I'm trying to improve and like get better at and not do or do. And it really comes down to, this is the way forward. This is how you get through it. You know, actually, you know what? You know what you're doing? I figured it out. I figured it out. So, the devil, idle hands is the devil's playground or workshop is the devil's workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're actually what you're doing. Got it. So what you're doing in a way, you're actually working through it. And it's like that intuition piece that you talk about with your spirituality and God, you're actually taking that wonderful template and playbook that was given to us so long ago, in that idea and concept of the devil, the idle hands or the devil's workshop. It actually allows you to recognize, for me to not do what the devil wants me to do, I have to do what is good and morally good for me and is in a godly realm. Right. So not saying you're God, in a godly realm.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a higher spiritual realm, you are bringing yourself up. As some people would say, I am raising my vibrations, you know? And that's what you're doing, is you're moving, you're taking action. You're actually doing instead of thinking of just doing. And even while you're not doing and you're just thinking, you're thinking of how to move forward in that positive realm of your strengths. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well said. I like it.
Hell yeah. I think that's a good place to end too. Shit. We went 15 minutes over here. unbelievable. This has been such a pleasure to meet you, speak with you. Scott, I hope that you maybe stay in touch with us too, brother. If you want to come out on a retreat sometime, anytime, we'd love to have you come out. There's actually there's a guy that I'm trying to get out on a retreat that, that would be amazing to have you be there with him. It's someone that I know for a fact is struggling with that side of things. I would love to have you. Would you be open to that if I hit you up like, yo, in 2 months, you gotta come out and you gotta talk to this guy. I need you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be there. Your story, the way you handle yourself and hold yourself to it is important. I like you, man. You're cool. You got a good head on your shoulders. I'm happy you're healing. Seriously. I'm happy you're doing a lot of healing. Now I know why Wade wanted you on here and wanted us to talk. That is cool.
Yeah. Thanks, James. Yeah. Absolutely. I appreciate what you're doing too. And let's stay in touch for sure.
Let's do it, brother. All right, man. I'm going to end this stream here. You're going to stay on with me. But everybody, thank you so much. If you are thinking who I think you are, that would be a great idea. Actually not that guy, but I know what guy you're talking about. And yeah, that guy too, that would be cool. Mark, thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Claire. I'm sure it's fun to watch me do my weird antics. I really do. When I'm thinking, you can see it all over my face. Hopefully listening to the base coach, if there was one, Ray, you're never a good coach. You're not even there. You're sitting on the bench because you're getting over your, you're trying to get your breath back because you're carrying 300 pounds now. Claire, love it. Very cool. And I get stuck in my head too. Mark, I hope we found a way here by our conversation today with Scott. Maybe there's a path for you forward to get out of that headspace, you know, into an action-oriented mode. Because that's all it takes is just action. Damn, I love that. Cool. And that's it. So thank you guys so much. I appreciate you all. And be good. See you.